Jack's first thought as he opens the door to the house his family has rented for the week of the 4th of July is that it is insincere. He stands in the kitchen, the door open, knob still in his hand, and waits a moment. Then he walks through the door. The house is long and thin, with a kitchen immediately inside the entrance and a dining room just off of that. Double doors on the dining room lead out to the front lawn. Past the table, there's a step down and steps into the living room. Picture windows run on each side, glass walls, uncomfortable. They allow a view on the one side of a spectacular marsh meadow that continues out to where the marsh's canals join the sea and run to the beach, visible through the opposite window. He feels as if he is waiting for a parade to come down the road. A picture forms in his head of a couple standing on the spot and saying, "It's beautiful," embracing as they decided to build a house there so people would pay money to rent it, which is what he and his family are doing. Most rentals sold a fantasy. "This was our house. We loved it. You will too." A guestbook usually asks people to write inside it, and after a week spent questioning the taste of the renters with his brothers, their books, furniture, their relationship to feng shui, Jack felt downright shitty to then sit down and write, "Thanks for a wonderful week," but he still usually did it. Here, though, that first pretense is too thin. The landlords had never had any kind of happiness here, the house apparently furnished by amnesiac compulsives, people who at each point of sale forgot where they lived and what they'd bought before, and yet continued shopping. A nautical theme clashes with something that means to be French country, both undone by wicker furniture, painted white, this in turn beside a set of rundown contemporary beige leather sofas and chairs that Jake is tempted to wipe down. Fake flowers on dried wreaths, those somehow are the worst of all, and sit like punctuation on the walls, including one that looks like a frightening spider on the second window. The wreaths in the kitchen nearly block the view out the window. Jack pauses in front of the upstairs wreath for a moment. He isn't sure how to get it down, short of knocking it loose with a frisbee. He walks back down to the kitchen. In place of any taste, he understands it as a series of gestures, each disorganizing the next, and none of it organized by a sense of pleasure in the things themselves. It was probably exactly like their lives. Anyone's lives, for that matter. In the kitchen, he pulls the offending wreath off the window and runs upstairs with it, sitting it in a closet on a shelf, closing the door. Downstairs again, he pauses to scrutinize a kilim underfoot in the living room, surrounded by the leather furniture on one side, the white wicker on the other, like a style gang fight is imminent. He finds the kilim suspicious, the green more Newport Beach than ancient caliphate. A Turk might have done it, but if he did, he was insincere. It seems insensate, even. The scrap underfoot. A breeze moves through. In his rush to inspect, he has left the door open. He should have shut the door. But it is Maine, after all. A criminal entrance, marginally less likely. And he smiles as the wind plays over the walls, as if a ghost is moving through it and touching everything. The wind is sincere. Also the beauty of the marsh, the sun, and the sea in the distance. Also the long stretch of sky, full of clouds that look to be the size of nations, a little fancier than castles. He remembers being a small child and having an idea that heaven meant you lived among enormous clouds forever. You would fly along the air, full of light, feeling like you were both in the world and of it, and not always renting a piece of it or buying it. The clouds in his vision again, now framed by the window in this insincere house. He longs for an end to rent, to purchase, to employment. He longs for an end to the whole strange rigged machine of it. And at times he wonders if this is a wish for the end of life. But when he asks himself that, it isn't death he wants, just a sense of belonging that he imagines possible after death. But perhaps that is as likely to elude him there as it has eluded him his entire life. A show debuted that year on television of spirits made to work in the afterlife without any choice, solving mysteries. And he thought, of course we'll have jobs when we die. More than a few people had described him as an old soul, but this had never been comforting. To his mind, this meant being like the kid who's too old for seventh grade, but has been held back twice. There is no social promotion in karma, he learned, when he read up on it. And if he is an old soul, It is because in his past lives, he died without learning what he should, and so he's been sent back here until he does. So he is the old bitter soul. Mean, mean, mean. Still held back from what's next.